Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Sauce of the Scary. Derek Zhu, Jeff Wright for episode 150. Holy smokes, man. Congratulations on this huge milestone, Jeff.
Hey, you too, buddy. I can't imagine anybody I'd rather spend 150 episodes with. So congrats back to you. And here's to the next however many we get through.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm excited to see what the future holds for us.
Absolutely.
So before we get into our main event of the week, I do want to talk to you about a few different trailers. Let's cue up everyone's favorite part of the show.
Jeff hates trailers.
And Jeff, I've got four for you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it is the most wonderful time of the year. It's starting to get a little colder. Pumpkin Spice is back. Count Chocula is back, Jeff.
I mean, I've heard one good thing so far that you've said.
You're not a fall person? You're not a particular fall person?
You know, I don't dislike fall. I love Halloween. And also for my religious commitments, Reformation Day is a big deal for us. But all I can feel in fall is not like the cheer of cooling temperatures and changing colors in the leaves, but the creeping hand of cold death from winter. As soon as I see leaves starting to turn, I picture me standing at a gas pump somewhere with an icy wind cutting right through me, and that's all I can think of. So It's not fall's fault. It's mine, but I can't see fall for winter.
Well, that's better than where I thought you were going with that. See a leaf fall to the ground, and I go, time is a construct. We're all doomed.
Existential angst. I don't know. Yeah. No, I'm just much more selfish and superficial, dude. I don't want to be cold.
Hey, fair enough, man. I get that, too. But anyway, with that comes a slew of Halloween movies and trailers and whatnot. And so I'm going to give you four trailers I saw this week, and I'm going to rank them from least excited to most excited.
Okay, cool by me.
We're going to go in that order. So the first one is going to be Adam Sandler's new movie called Hubie Halloween.
Okay.
And the synopsis on it is this. Despite his devotion to his hometown of Salem and its Halloween celebration, Hubie Dubois is a figure of mockery for kids and adults alike. But this year, something is going bump in the night, and it's up to Hubie to save Halloween.
Oh, man, that sounds like classic Adam Sandler. I don't know how much classic is left, but that, I mean, it sounds like Mr. Deeds or something, you know, Little Nicky. Yeah. I mean, that's right in the wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like he is an amalgamation of all of his old characters in this. Like, there's a little Bobby Boucher in him. There's a little Mr. Deeds, little this and this and this in there. So it looks real dumb.
Is this a Netflix thing?
It is a Netflix thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but check out this cast, man. So, of course, Sandler, Julie Bowen, Steve Buscemi, Maya Rudolph, Ray Liotta, Kevin James, Rob Schneider, Michael Chiklis, Kenan Thompson, Blake Clark, Tim Meadows, Shaquille O'Neal, Melissa Villaseñor from SNL, Colin Quinn, Lavelle Crawford, George Wallace. There's got to be more. I thought there was like a couple other people that I wanted to mention I saw in the trailer, but I guess I can't see him in the cast. Anyway, star-studded.
No kidding. And it's all, Sandler-verse.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess really it just depends on how you feel about Adam Sandler and the SCU.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you're into that still, and I have nostalgia for it, if you're into that, this is like the platonic ideal. This may be the most perfect Adam Sandler cast ever assembled.
Yeah.
And of course, Rob Schneider's there for that. You know, I wonder how it takes him to say yes when Adam calls him.
I mean, I think it's just on his voicemail, right? Like, hey, you've reached the voicemail of Rob Schneider. Adam, whatever you need, buddy, just let me know when I need to be there. For everybody else, just leave a message.
Send the check to the normal address.
Yeah, yeah. Also, thanks for getting me that Netflix comedy special. I'm not really good, so I appreciate you putting your neck out for me.
We're taking Schneider down a couple pegs. Sorry. Sorry, Rob. Thanks for listening.
Whatever. Suck it, Deuce Bigelow.
Yeah, thanks for the Netflix special in like the last two decades of my career.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, look, it's good to have friends.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, who am I to say that if Adam Sandler didn't call me tomorrow, it was like, hey, I'm doing this. I'm doing Canteen Boy in the movie. Are you in? I'd be like, yeah, of course I am. What do you think? I'm stupid.
And you should do that, Adam. Thank you for listening too.
So anyway, this movie, Hubie Halloween, comes out on the greatest day of the year.
Mm, your birthday?
Yeah, that's right. Wednesday, October the 7th.
Oh, good deal.
Yeah. So definitely something I won't be enjoying on my birthday.
I bet you'll watch it. Maybe not on your birthday, though.
Yeah. You know what, though? I guess this is going to be difficult for us to watch Bly Manor, but I actually canceled Netflix.
Mm. Yeah, I've got Netflix on hiatus too. Bly Manor might bring me back long enough to watch it and then cancel again. I haven't decided, but I've had that same thought.
Yeah, it's Bly Manor, and then there was something else I saw where I was like, dang it, Netflix, you're going to drag me right back into this thing.
Yeah, they always, I think they announced their like Halloween content list already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll drag me back. But you know, I'll fight it. I'll fight as long as I can.
That's right.
Netflix, Shudder, I think WWE Network. We've got quite the hit list right now with canceled streaming services.
Yeah, well, Shudder's dead to me. So and the WWE Network's not too far behind. So all right. So Hubie Halloween. The next one is going to be a movie called Rebecca. This too is a Netflix original, and the synopsis of it is this: after a whirlwind romance in Monte Carlo, I think I said Marty. I didn't mean to. After a whirlwind romance in Monte Carlo with handsome widower Maxim de Winter, played by Armie Hammer,
His name is Maxim Winter?
Maxim de Winter, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. This is the first I knew about that. I just saw the trailer and thought it was pretty good.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, a goofy name isn't necessarily the kiss of death.
Right. A newly married woman, Lily, played by Lily James, arrives at Manderley, her new husband's imposing family estate, on a windswept, English coast. Naive and inexperienced, she begins to settle into the trappings of her new life, but finds herself battling the shadow of Maxim's first wife, the elegant and urbane Rebecca, whose haunting legacy is kept alive by Manderley's sinister housekeeper, Mrs. Danvers, played by Kristen Scott Thomas.
I mean, I guess I'm in for Evil Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
If I resume Netflix, I'll watch Evil Downton Abbey.
So this movie is based on a novel of the same name that was actually turned into a famous European musical. I guess Hitchcock directed a version of this in 1940.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. I'm scouring. You know, my mom was a big Hitchcock fan. A couple of years ago, I bought her the box set. I say a couple. It's been a while. I don't know that I knew that. I'm trying to think if I ever saw a movie called Rebecca.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Olivier was in.
Wow. Yeah. I guess I need to go back and look. Mom, can I borrow your box set? Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Shout out to Miss Hilda. Yeah, I've never heard of the book before. I've never heard of the Hitchcock movie as well. I thought that this was a newer novel. You know, it says in the trailer that it's based off the novel. And I was like, oh, well, I'll track that down somewhere and, you know, read it. But now I guess I have even more reason to.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll give that one a goog. I'm interested now, and I'm going to have to find the Hitchcock film.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're interested in watching this new adaptation of the movie Rebecca, it drops on Netflix on October the 21st.
Okay. See, they've got those. Got those hooks in the water. I'm just swimming around trying to avoid them.
Yeah, that's the truth. So the next one will be for the movie Dune. We finally got a trailer for the highly anticipated Dune movie.
So all my friends who are into pop culture were super excited about that trailer. Mm. Can I confess to you that I've never seen Dune?
That's fine. I've never seen it either.
Mm. This is a horror movie podcast, right? Not space, sci-fi, whatever.
I've never seen it. This, it looks okay. I'm not very familiar with Timothée Chalamet.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's one of those actors that the teenagers go crazy for.
Yeah, I think critics love him too. I don't think I've seen much with him in it.
Yeah. I guess the only thing that I saw that I can remember him being in was Lady Bird, and I hated that movie so much.
Yeah. He was the boyfriend or something. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Or like, not to give anything away, like a potential boyfriend. Yeah, I remember that.
But, I mean, this cast is nuts, dude. You've got Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, our favorite from Dr. Sleep, Jason Momoa, Dave Bautista, Josh Brolin, Oscar Isaac, Stellan Skarsgård, Javier Bardem, Charlotte Rampling, and then a bunch of people I don't know. But I mean, still, that's a murderer's row right there.
No kidding. And good for Dave Bautista becoming a better and better actor and getting recognition for it.
Oh man, I'm so happy for that guy. He's really found himself, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. And he really does. Like, every time he is in a movie, I'm like, this dude is getting better every time.
Yep. He seems to really take it seriously, and I'm delighted by that. More power to him.
Yeah. Did you watch My Spy?
No, I never saw My Spy.
Okay. I think that was the name of it. It was him and this little girl. And yeah, My Spy. Yeah. And I mean, it's not going to win any awards, but I thought it was a cute little movie.
Yeah. I should probably throw it on with the kiddos.
Yeah. He had a real good chemistry with that little girl, and it was good. It was a fun little movie. So anyway, how excited are you about Dune?
I mean, I want to be more excited just because I know that this is the kind of thing that should be in my wheelhouse. But right now I have an incomplete in the grade book because I just don't know enough about the property. I sat down to start reading the books a couple of years ago, and not for lack of want to, something else got in the way and I just didn't pick them back up. And I've never really made my way into the books or anything else. So I guess it's just time for me to start figuring Dune out.
Yeah.
So just on the subject of exploring a new franchise, I guess is the right term, I'll give it an excitement score on a scale of 1 to 10 of 3.
Okay. That's fair. For me, this isn't, even though it probably should be, I don't think it'll be a go to the movies type thing for me. Mm. Unless like all my friends come back and they're like, dude, you got to go see Dune. Then I may give it a shot on a random like Monday or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I I don't know, man. There's some sci-fi properties that I absolutely adore and want to be there for. And then there's others that I couldn't care less about. And this is kind of one of those couldn't care less about.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is my favorite thing in the world, probably as a franchise outside of horror. Mm-hmm. But Star Trek doesn't, I always thought, well, I'd like to be into Star Trek, but I've just never really jumped in and found it as compelling. So I could be similar. I could be in my head a sci-fi fan in a way that I'm not actually in real life. Sometimes we believe lies about ourselves, Derek.
That's incredibly true. So Dune comes out sometime in December. December the 18th is when it's expected to be released.
Okay. Well, I'll probably go see that. I'm assuming I'll go see that.
Yeah. I mean, odds are I will too, like sometime around Christmas. You know, it looks like we're going to work. Looks like we're doing two shows on Christmas Eve at the Stampede. So I probably won't get to come home for Christmas. So that's probably what I'll be doing Christmas
Yikes.
Day.
Okay. Well, this is dark and bleak, and we've got to do something about this.
I agree. Yikes. Quit and move home. You got it.
I second the motion.
And then, Jeff, we've got the trailer that I am the most excited about. And I watched it the other day. I get Universal and I are really tight. And so they send me emails. They're like, hey, we know you have this podcast and we think that this would be on your radar.
Mm-hmm.
So I got sent this. I got sent this trailer the other day for a movie called Freaky. And here is the synopsis on Freaky. After swapping bodies with a deranged serial killer, a young girl in high school discovers she has less than 24 hours before the change becomes permanent.
Okay. I was all set up for Freaky Dave from Magic 98.5 in town, and I'm just trying to get over the shock of it not being Freaky Dave. Okay, so what's got you so excited about this one?
It is from the writer and director of Happy Death Day.
Oh, okay.
And it has that same kind of feel to it, that same kind of cadence to it. Plus, the serial killer is played by Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, man. I can see why you're excited. Okay, yeah. Cool. That's exciting stuff. That's a good deal.
Yeah, it's a real fun trailer. And if it's half as fun as the trailer looks, I think it's going to be a good time at the movies.
Awesome. Okay. So big wide release then, right? It's coming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. And it'll be here on Friday the 13th, which is in November.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay. Well, now we went from like the darkness of you being at work on Christmas Eve to, not comparably bright, but at least brighter Friday the 13th in November. So cool by me, man. Sign me up.
Yeah. And the lady that is playing the teenage girl in this, her name is Catherine Newton, and she played Angela in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Mississippi.
Yes. Bring it all together. That's awesome. Is this Blumhouse? Yeah. No, you said Universal. Or I it guess is it Universal. Could be Universal Blumhouse.
It may also be Blumhouse. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing that got on my radar was from the writer, from Christopher Landon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. the writer-director of Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. So, you know, another spunky blonde in a horrific time period. So,
sure.
Sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely. The guy knows how to get that done, obviously. It might be time for me to throw on Happy Death Day to You again. I hadn't revisited that movie in a long time.
You know, it was on HBO not too long ago, and I sat down and threw it on one night, and man, it's I still don't think it's as good.
Sure.
Just because of like the quantum physics stuff of it. I think that kind of ruins everything. But there are some moments in there where like you, I mean, it gets dusty in the room.
Yeah.
And of course, our girl Tree is just, she's great.
So. She's great, man. Way to go. Shout out Jessica Roth. Thank you for listening. Yeah.
Man, we got a lot of high-profile listeners on this podcast. That's really cool.
Yeah, my mom all the way to Tree. That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, Hilda was the one that I was thinking of the first. Like, that's high profile as I can think of.
Sure. 150 episodes will get you there, man, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of
Jeff Hates Trailers.
All right, man. So let's jump into
this week's.
And there is substantial news this week. I'm going to move from less awesome to more. Okay.
Okay.
So here's the bad news. Candyman got pulled. Did you see this?
I did see that.
And we were waiting for it to drop next month. And now they're saying it's not going to show up till 2021.
Yeah.
I just don't get this. I don't know why they think 2021 is going to be better than people coming off of, you know, not being able to go to theaters forever, wanting some reason to go back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if I were running a theater franchise or even a theater, I would want something like this to be like, here's your jump back in option. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. I realize there's a whole host of people out there who, you know, they're just not going to go back to the theaters in the foreseeable future. But I think that catches up 2021 as well, right? Like you don't know when the people who have made that decision are going to feel safe enough to go back. So why flip it on the calendar to a point where things may not be any better? I was super bummed out by this.
Yeah, man, it is really frustrating. You know, I got to go see Tenet. Whenever I got to go see Tenet, I don't even remember now. Maybe it was a fever dream. Maybe I didn't go at all. I don't remember. No, I got to go see Tenet, on my last day off whenever that was. And it was so nice to be back in the movie theater.
Yeah.
You know, and again, shout out to Alamo Draft House for taking care of its patrons and making sure that it's as safe as possible. And I think I even told you when we recorded that episode, like I've never felt safer going to the movies than I did going to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's disheartening to hear like Dr. Fauci say, I don't think we'll be able to do live theater or you'll be able to go see a movie until the middle of next year, when like I am a live performer and I've been working for the last 3 months and I did go see a movie.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into the craziness of all that stuff, because you know that's just going to cause division. But I really do hate that they're going to pull this for the foreseeable future. And I just hope that we get this thing in 2021 and we get it fairly early on, you know, first quarter, maybe.
I've just got to believe, though, they'll keep it for Halloweenish.
You think so?
Maybe they won't.
Peele released Get Out in February and he released Us in March. So I know this isn't his entire baby, but okay. So this kind of coalesces what we're going to talk about. With our main event today, do you feel like that Peele is kind of like the Steven Spielberg on this Candyman thing?
That's a really good question. I mean, I that puts me in a dilemma because I want to see new talent get opportunities. I want to see Peele use his star power to like help others increase their profile. I'd like to see him like coaching people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm enthusiastic about that side. But if you're telling me like, can I get a low key secret Jordan Peele movie out of Candyman? Yeah, I'm here for that. So
yeah,
it's kind of like being stuck between two good options, and I guess I would just prefer for Peele to tell the guy, hey, you sit over there and you say cut
and yeah,
scene, and I'll take care of the rest.
Yeah, I just just going through some research and trivia on Poltergeist today made me realize that this is more of a Steven Spielberg movie than it is a Tobe Hooper movie, and I was just wondering, now that we're talking about it, if that's not the same thing for Peele, if he if he wasn't just there every day like, oh, okay, yeah, I mean, that looks good, but why don't we do it this way? And the guy was like, oh, okay, yeah, sounds good.
Some Hooper fans just felt their hair ignite. So let's y'all hang with us. It's going to get gooder.
Come at me.
Yeah, get at Derek, but we got more to say. I'm reading online people blaming Tenet for this choice. Basically, the theory is that Nolan pushed people to push theaters to reopen in order to release Tenet because he prefers big screen, and you know, it didn't do super well. And so now everybody's hesitant. That's a really frustrating approach if that's true. So if that conspiracy theory is true, one, it tells me that it's not objectively about safety or, you know, sickness or anything like that. It was just, let's make the big director happy and maybe cash in, right? It also seems silly to me on a movie that everybody I know who has seen Tenet has said anyway that is super interesting and really compelling, but also sort of full Nolan weird, and using that as your test case for all other movies. So anyway, I guess the too long didn't read version is just that theaters may not be making the most informed choices or the wisest choices, and that sounds like pre-2020.
Yay.
I just don't know when these things get better. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not just virus, but like theater management. When does it get better? When does it get better enough for people to just kind of go back and watch a movie if they want to? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I can start warming us up to better things. In the Scream franchise version of the Rob Schneider effect from earlier, did you see that Matthew Lillard isn't convinced that his character died in Scream?
I did see that.
I'm assuming his agent is also not convinced that Stu is dead. And yeah. I would be very happy to talk to representatives from the new Scream film that's coming out.
Yeah.
Any interest in seeing Matthew Lillard return?
Oh, dude, I'd love that. I love Matthew Lillard.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he isn't a bigger name than he is, you know, now.
He definitely is a what happened to that guy.
Well, he's on a TV show.
Is he?
Yeah. He's on NBC's Girls, or Good Girls, excuse me, with Christina Hendricks and Retta and the girl from Arrested Development. Did you ever watch Arrested Development?
I did not. That, you know, like, okay. Dune, that is one that I should have seen, but I just never did.
Yeah, you really should watch Arrested Development. Excuse me. You really should watch Arrested Development. It's great. But for the life of me, I can't remember her name, and that makes it even funnier. Mae Whitman is her name.
Hmm.
It's a decent little what happens when a suburban mom breaks bad.
Okay.
Type situation. But yeah, so Matthew Lillard is on that. So his career isn't completely dead.
Yeah, I think he did a turn in Dexter maybe as an agent at one point. Or was it Justified? There was some kind of like cops and crime show I was really into that. Yeah. I think Lillard showed up as like a FBI or equivalent government agency agent for a little while. And I was like, oh, good to see him.
Are you thinking of Scooby-Doo?
I may be. I usually am, but I don't think so in this case.
What about Supernatural? Are you thinking about that?
Could be. Definitely could be Supernatural. More likely than Scooby-Doo.
But yeah, you know, it seems like he kind of went the voice actor route instead of... I just assumed that he was going to be a big deal in Hollywood, you know, in 1996 when Scream came out. I was like, oh, that guy's going to be... I'm going to see him. And I mean, I guess I have, you know, over the last 25 years, but I just assumed he would do more.
Sure.
Especially after sorry to interrupt you there, but especially after he was in like She's All That, and then he did Scooby-Doo and, you know, all that stuff. It just seemed like he was primed to be a pretty big deal. But, you know, honestly, when you really think about it, nobody from Scooby-Doo, well, except for Linda Cardellini, is really doing anything that big right now. And you would have expected all those guys to be pretty popular.
Absolutely right. It is a weird deal because at the time that seemed like the, you know, the new Brat Pack or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they were a little bit older, but nonetheless, sort of that same idea of like this generation is coming into its own. It's strange. With Lillard himself, you mentioned Vince Vaughn earlier. It seems like he could do a Vince Vaughn kind of thing where generally a funny guy really does have comedic chops, but can do much more than that as well. And maybe he's doing that on Good Girls. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing really well on Good Girls.
Good.
You know, his characters. Yeah, his character is one of the bright spots on the show. So
okay, all right. Well, we've delayed long enough. I'm assuming everybody is aware of this already, but if not, this is the Saw Something Scary debut of the piece of knowledge that Neve Campbell is returning as Sidney Prescott in the new Scream movie. She said, after spending time speaking with Radio Silence, they have shown such love, respect, and admiration for Wes Craven and all that he's created in the Scream franchise. I am beyond excited to step back into the role of Sidney Prescott and return to Woodsboro. Derek, we've talked about this a little bit already. Scale of 1 to 10, though. How excited are you for Sidney to come back?
15.
Okay, good deal. Two scenarios. The movie is largely about, this is one scenario, the movie is largely about Sidney avoiding reinvigorated Ghostface, or Sidney largely uses her time in the film to hand the reins of the franchise to another Scream Queen. Which one would you pick if you had to choose?
I think the latter.
I'm with you.
But I do feel like that one of the main three needs to get killed in the beginning of the movie.
Well, we've got them. We've got Arquette, Cox, and Neve back. So you have fodder for the murder.
Yeah. It just seems like until you get rid of the three of them, they're just going to keep coming back, especially at times where you don't need them.
I think in some ways it's kind of like what we see in professional wrestling, right? At some point you kind of have to move Hogan off, and then you have to move like The Rock off for there to be enough sunlight for other people to grow.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to chase any of these people out of the franchise that they define. But if we want Scream for my kids to watch,
yeah,
it's not going to be fun watching Ghostface chase, you know, Sidney around on a walker at a nursing home. So we need to get some new talent in the pipeline.
Yep. And I love Neve Campbell, and I want more Neve Campbell in my life, you know, but there also comes a point where you go, how many times can she avoid being like, how stupid are these people to not be able to kill her?
Sure.
when they have the chance to do it, and they're just waiting, you know, for the opportune moment to whip their mask off and show them who they really are, and then she can kill them. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a version of that we're all ready to sign up for, but you just eventually can't keep making new movies off of it. To your point about wanting more Neve Campbell, this may be specifically for you, Derek, but I've been wanting to tell you, and I thought on air might be the best way to do it. My kids and I are watching episode by episode through Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes.
So, you know, we bought that Voodoo package that has like a whole bunch of them, and it just made me be like, I just want to watch all of these. So I went and found all of them. My kids are watching it with me. We're in season 4 now, and something I learned, one of your favorite characters, Dr. Vink, is a recurring character. He's in that thing a lot, and he plays a lot of different, like, he's always Dr. Vink, but he's like, you know, a magician one time and a scientist another time and a chef another time, right? So I'm into season 4, and there's a Dr. Vink episode where he plays a chef who's got this $100 soup that everybody wants to drink, or excuse me, eat. And guess who plays in that episode?
Neve Campbell.
None other than a lovely, fresh-faced Neve Campbell.
Yep.
And I've seen a couple of those where it's like, oh, hey, I didn't know you were in Are You Afraid of the Dark? But she's probably the highest profile one so far. And I didn't know she was in there.
So that is in that Voodoo package.
Okay.
And as soon as I saw, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Neve Campbell is in Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad that she's in that episode with Dr. Vink.
Yeah, not a bad episode either. I mean, it's not the scariest one ever, but she gets to do quite a bit, you know, by comparison to what they usually have the child stars doing. So,
yeah,
good episode. My kids are into it.
Oh, Dr. Vink. I miss that man.
Well, man, we will wrap up the Nev Campbell section of the podcast if you are ready to do so.
This has been this week's I Love Nev segment of the show,
which we're happy to include anytime she wants to, you know, create news for us to talk about.
Or come on the show. Hi, Nev. We know you're listening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, Nev.
You're not Jeff's mom, but you're pretty close.
I mean, not everybody can be, you know, it's kind of a singular role.
That's true. That's true.
This has been this week's
Well, my friend, are you ready to pull the curtain on 1982's Poltergeist?
Dude, I'm pumped. Let's do it. Pull the string.
Where do you want to start with this one, man? You want to just go into the Toby Hooper thing that I can't ever remember how to say his name?
I don't know if it's Toby or Tobe. It doesn't matter. But before we do that, Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert.
All right, yeah, let's get into it, man. Yeah, I think that's probably the smartest place to start.
So who made this movie?
I think that it is a joint collaboration between Spielberg and Hooper.
Okay.
But gun to my head, I think this is Spielberg's movie.
Look, I know that there are Hooper fans out there who are not going to be happy about this. Guys, it's not because I don't like Hooper. I just watched this movie, and it screams Steven Spielberg to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It, you know, it's set in suburbia. It is full of bad capitalists, you know, like it's the real estate developers here. Even the effects, like the scene where the ghosts come out of the TV and go into the wall, that just, it's all Spielberg, man. And I know that he was associated with the project. Maybe Hooper decided, hey, we'll use his stuff. If that's your theory on this thing, hey, more power to you. But I just watched this movie and it seems entirely a Spielberg production. I don't know what else to do with that other than just acknowledge it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the telltale thing was when at the end of the movie, when Craig T. Nelson looks at the guy and he goes, "They belong in a museum." That's pretty Spielberg-esque. Sorry. I thought that was a better joke than it was. I apologize. That's an Indiana Jones quote. I was just giving it to Craig T. Nelson. So, sorry, guys. Like, it's early. I've worked 87 days straight, so they can't all be home runs.
I do think the "you never move the bodies" kind of works in the same way, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Spielberg. You know, you did your reading. I did my reading on this. Somewhere along the way, I saw a comment from someone who worked on the set who said that Hooper was maybe indulging in some mind-altering substances while making the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems reasonable to me that the guy was a little baked and Spielberg couldn't contractually work on the movie, you know, because of his ET commitments, but he was on the set. And if the guy is happy to let him, well, he'll just direct the thing.
Yeah, I think it was Zelda Rubinstein that was pretty adamant about the fact of like, oh, Hooper's hopped up on some hallucinogenics. And I mean, I'm sure that there are probably other people that would agree to that as well. But yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, Spielberg's responsible for the final edit of the film. He supervised the visual effects. I mean, once post-production work happened in early 1982, Spielberg was in total control. You know, there's a quote that Spielberg gave. I'm trying to find it, so bear with me. So when he was questioned about who had greater control over the film, this is what Spielberg said. Tobe isn't a take charge sort of guy. If a question was asked and an answer wasn't immediately forthcoming, I'd jump in and say what we could do. Tobe would nod in agreement, and that became the process of our collaboration. Co-producer Frank Marshall spoke out to the press and claimed that the creative force of the movie was Steven. Tobe was the director and was on set every day, but Steven did the design for every storyboard and was only absent for 3 days during the shoot because he was in Hawaii with George Lucas. Hooper later claimed that he did half of the storyboards, obviously felt a little jilted on that. So apparently then Spielberg sent him a letter that read something like this. Regrettably, some of the press has misunderstood the rather unique, creative relationship you and I shared through the making of Poltergeist. I enjoyed your openness in allowing me, as a writer and a producer, a wide berth for creative involvement, just as I know you were happy with the freedom you had to direct Poltergeist so wonderfully. Through the screenplay, you accepted a vision of this very intense movie from the start, and as the director, you delivered the goods. You performed responsibly and professionally throughout, and I wish you great success on your next project.
You know, I read that same thing, and this is an interesting movie just in the fact that it kind of became a classic example or a high profile example of Hollywood politics and, like, you know, unions getting involved about who said what about their role in the film and whatnot. But when I hear that, when I read that letter or hear you read it again, I just think he's trying to protect his E.T. money. You know, he's contractually obligated to only be working on E.T. That movie makes, I mean, this movie did very well too, but E.T. makes a bajillion dollars. He doesn't want to jeopardize anything going forward with his relationship to E.T. I mean, think about how many times he specifically said you directed or director there. Like, it seems like he wrote that to be evidence in a potential lawsuit with the studio over whether or not he honored his contract to only work on E.T.
Yeah.
It's a weird deal, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Hollywood really is like a kingdom, and there's just court politics, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's crazy, the hierarchy that goes on in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it almost feels like to me that Spielberg is almost selling Hooper on the idea that he directed the movie.
Yes. Like, let's let this be the story so we both get what we need to get out of this.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the feel, the look, the texture of this movie just screams Spielberg. And what a crazy thought that this movie came out a week after or a week before E.T.
Yeah, I mean, Spielberg at the height of his powers, right?
Yeah. I think, sorry to interrupt. I think Entertainment Weekly called it the summer of Spielberg.
Well, and they should. I mean,
yeah.
It again, two clearly Spielberg sourced movies across the spectrum from each other, but not entirely disconnected. You know, like, we'll get into this later, but this movie has made multiple lists of, like, scariest movies ever. And I've seen it before, and whatever. I thought, you know, it's an early 80s horror movie. I was never particularly frightened, but this one almost plays more like a comedy when I watch it now. And again, it just feels very Spielbergian. E.T., this strange creature from out of the sky, definitely is a warm-hearted family comedy kind of movie, but you're dealing with aliens and mysterious government figures who are up to no good. They both land in the middle between family-based comedy and family-based, I don't want to say horror, and I don't want to say thriller because I hate that word, but you know, just it's like two different versions of the same movie, one less sinister and one more sinister, or one more lighthearted and the other less lighthearted.
Yeah, and I think if you were to ask, you know, I'm trying to think, 5-6-year-old Derek, what was the scarier movie of the two? I think I probably would have told you E.T.
Yeah, I don't think I would want to argue that point. I mean, E.T., he's lovable and cute and all that. There's a reason everybody glommed onto him, right? Mm-hmm. But there's mysterious parts of that show that for a little kid maybe would be more scary. Now, having said that, I don't remember the steak scene from this movie from when I watched it when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was cut or not. The guy running into the powder room or whatever, the utility room to tear his face off. I don't know if that was in the TV edit of this thing I saw. I know the big white face beast guarding the door was. Mm-hmm. But I remember basically thinking that was Falcor or whatever from The NeverEnding Story.
Yes.
I was 100% not scared by the dog dragon showing back up.
Yeah. I just kept waiting for it to go, "There is no Caroline, only Zool."
Yeah. I mean, it just... Yeah, okay, cool. It just wasn't a deeply frightening effect. And even the, you know, the closet sucking the kids into it through the air and all the stuff in the room. And, you know, later on, the kids, both of them hanging onto their beds or whatever while they're flying towards the, or they're attempting to be drawn into the closet. Like, that looked kind of fun. You know what I mean? Like, I would have signed up for that and paid money to do it if I could have. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Maybe E.T. would have been scarier because a lot of this stuff just, even as a kid, kind of made me laugh.
Yeah.
I will tell you something that I did not expect on this film. It is my Achilles heel as a horror fan that I watch, you know, all the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched Poltergeist, and then I knew I had seen the second Poltergeist cover, but I don't remember the movie. So I watched the two sequels, and they're not good. Basically, at part two, Carol Ann becomes, like, at part two, it's a sequel to The Shining, not a sequel to Poltergeist.
Yeah.
And there's this creepy religious guy, and I'm always delighted to see evangelicals portrayed so lovingly, you know. So it was just a thrill a minute watching these two sequels.
Reverend Cain, right?
Yeah, Reverend Cain. But I looked up to see what Carol Ann was doing and did not realize she died super young, man.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's part of the Poltergeist curse.
Well, see, I didn't know anything about the Poltergeist curse. And I think curse is a little stretched. But anyway, that's how I learned about it. I watched all the sequels and thought, well, now what has she done since then? Because by the time you get to Poltergeist 3, there's some serious, like, talent there. There's people that have worked in a bunch of movies in number 3. So I was checking her IMDb and noticed it abruptly stopped. And I thought, well, that's not good. And
shout out to Tom Skerritt, by the way.
Yeah. I can't remember her name. I think Lewis, but RoboCop's partner. She's in Poltergeist 3.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's just a lot of talent there. Laura Flynn Boyle from Twin Peaks fame. She's in that movie. So anyway, I found out about Carol Ann dying. I guess basically the theory is she died from complications from Crohn's disease, which is awful. I know I've got some relatives with Crohn's disease, and it can be really brutal on them.
So I don't want to actually you on that, but actually it was misdiagnosed as Crohn's disease.
Oh, what was the actual cause?
So she passed away, if I can find it. Oh, come on. Okay. So she had a congenital intestinal stenosis.
Mm-hmm.
There was a blockage in her intestine. It's the reason why in the third movie she looks so puffy. After reading about, her mother said she was very self-conscious about, because I think she was on a steroid at the time too, that kind of like made her cheeks look puffy, and she was just, she looked swollen because they were, you know, they were basically treating her for something that she didn't have. And so she went into cardiac arrest. They were able to revive her, bring her back. I think that she had surgery, survived the surgery, and then went into another cardiac arrest, and they couldn't revive her.
Man, that's awful.
Yeah, 12 years old, man.
Oh, that's so bad. Rest in peace, young lady.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Spielberg discovered her at the MGM commissary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And was like, hey, I want you to come read for this movie. And she couldn't get through her lines, even like the scary stuff, without laughing. And so Spielberg said, okay, come back tomorrow with a scary story. Let's try this again. And she did it again, and they loved her. And then I guess he was like, all right, now scream. And she screamed until she started crying. And then they're like, oh yeah, that's Carol Ann.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a cool story. I just hate the way it ended, you know, for her.
Yeah. Yeah. One more cool little piece of trivia I learned about this young lady. She, while everyone was at the table read, you know, pretty jacked up about the script and stuff, she just kind of sat there really calm, cool and collected. Apparently, she had like a photographic memory and could memorize 60 pages of dialogue every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What a talent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really heartbreaking to think that this young lady isn't still with us making movies or still in movies today.
Mm-hmm. You know, on that curse front, I told you, I think it's a little stretched. The guy who played the doomsday cult leader, Cain, that you talked about earlier, the Reverend Cain, who is super prominent in the next two movies. You know, he died when he was 60 in 85, but he was battling stomach cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So like that doesn't feel like a movie curse. It feels like a life sucks curse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when the gentleman died who played the shaman who helps the family out in part two, his name was Will Sampson. He played a character named Taylor. He died of a chronic degenerative condition, which again feels like a life sucks curse rather than a movie curse. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A 60-year-old dying of stomach cancer just doesn't seem to be as this is. Don't get me wrong. It's awful. It's a tragedy. I'm not saying it's not. But there is something even more like it should not be this way when you look at young Carol Ann passing away.
Yeah. Well, I think that the biggest thing about the poltergeist curse, quote unquote, is the fact that Dominic Dunn or Dune, I don't know how you say your last name. My Southern came out real bad on that, though. Dominic Dunn.
Well, thankfully, we never sound Southern on this podcast, so I think you can get away with it.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. But anyway, this young lady who plays the older sister, Dana is her name?
Yeah.
Is that right? She was murdered months after this movie came out.
Yeah, and that's the one that I'm like, this is too awful to believe. Basically, her boyfriend strangled her to death.
Yeah.
That's unimaginably awful.
Yeah.
And so... Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying it's okay for a man to die in his 60s from stomach cancer or, you know, a guy in his 50s to die from a degenerative chronic illness. But there is something about these young ladies being cut off in their either on the cusp of what we would consider to be, you know, most likely to be the best days of their life or right in the midst of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dominique, she ended up on life support for like 5 days before she passed away. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
It's just awful in every way. And so I guess for me, if we're going to talk about a poltergeist curse, I really just want to talk about the two young ladies who died and say, yeah, that's awful.
Yeah. That's what I would have attributed the curse, quote unquote, the curse to is the tragic passing of those two young ladies. You talk about those two gentlemen passed away, you know, whatever, but it's more apt, and I think it was even more apt back then for a man in his 50s or 60s to pass away than it is for like a little 12-year-old girl to die or a 23-year-old, you know, woman to be murdered.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's crazy. That is the thing that I remember the most about Poltergeist was being a child and watching it on TV and my mom being like, do you know that little girl died?
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, that little girl passed away a couple years ago. This was probably like 92, you know, when we were sitting there watching it. And you know, I was 92, I was 6 or 7, you know, at the right age to watch Poltergeist.
And, and to have your mom drop that heavy on you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Teresa, she didn't care to drop some knowledge from an early age. And so then we started talking about the Poltergeist curse. And I just always remembered... This is terrible, but I always thought that it was the little girl died and that filming that movie is the reason why Zelda Rubinstein was so short.
I don't think I'm allowed to laugh at that, but I'm just laughing at the young brain, right?
Yeah.
The conclusions of the young brain.
I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense why she's so tiny. The Poltergeist curse. I'm sure she was a full woman before she made that movie.
I want to make this movie. An actress, you know, doing a movie begins to experience strange physical changes. That
yeah,
kids are great, and little Derek visiting the podcast right here is really funny.
Yeah,
I appreciate you sharing that story with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I just, but it is, man. That is ingrained in my head. You know, is watching. I don't remember if we watched the first one first or if we're watching the second one. I know I've never seen the third one, and Well, you know, in my opinion, Craig T. Nelson's not in it. Hashtag not my poltergeist.
For sure.
But yeah, I just remember mom being like, yeah, you know, there were a lot of bad things that happened on that movie set. That little girl passed away. And I was like, oh, man, well, I guess that's why that lady's so tiny.
That joke won't ever be funny. Did you notice, this is kind of moving off topic, but Dominic Dunn was apparently like 11 and 14 years younger than her parents in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Nelson and his, I can't remember the young lady's name, Jo Beth Williams, maybe?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Either way, they were like basically old enough to be her older siblings, but she's their young daughter.
Yeah. So there's some controversy about the relationship between the mom and the daughter there. Apparently, Diane is Dana's stepmother. And it's never mentioned in the movie, but apparently in the novelization of Poltergeist, it is mentioned that Steve had a first marriage, and that's where Dana was from. And then Diane is her stepmom.
Well, you know, there's a scene in the movie where they mention the mom's age.
Mm-hmm. And 32.
Yeah. And like my wife perked right up and said she had them babies young. And so that makes sense of that.
They were from Sparta.
Yeah, for real. For real. So actually that helps quite a bit. In fact, I'm looking forward to telling my wife like, oh, and this is why that is in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've ever watched CinemaSins.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think you turned me on to it.
Okay, good. It's great. And there's a Poltergeist one. And that's one of the things he talks about is he was like, wait a minute. She's supposed to be 16 and your wife's 32 years old. What? How old are you? That's got to be a sin, right?
That's exactly right. And it's also exactly right. This was shot in Sparta, Tennessee.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, I say that as a guy who got married at 20 and my wife was 19. So,
yeah,
I'm not saying that I'm standing above my community here.
Nah, you are. Don't lie. You at least made it to 20.
She didn't, though. But,
well,
you know, when you're trying to marry over your head, the best thing you can do is get engaged when she still thinks you're cool. You know, if I'd have waited too long, she'd have been married. She'd been off with somebody better than me. So
that's a secret, kids. Trick them while they're young.
No, oh my gosh.
Feel free to edit that out. So that is crazy to me that, Craig T. Nelson was what, I guess 34 maybe at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm older than he is in this movie, which is weird because I'm used to identifying basically with a teenage daughter.
Right.
You know, like that she was my point of view character here. The other thing too, is that, Craig T. Nelson was born 45.
Yes.
How is he younger than 45 at any stage of his career? I don't understand it.
I don't know. You know, and it's something else I was thinking about while I was watching this movie last night is Craig T. Nelson is definitely the everyman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking there's no way on this planet this movie gets made with Craig T. Nelson today. This movie has Jason Momoa in it. Like, there's no way you're going to put an everyman. And I mean, I'm not saying that, like, this is going to sound weird. I'm not saying that Craig T. Nelson was, like, out of shape or unfit or anything. But, you know, he's got a little love handle and stuff. And I just remember being like, there's no way that anybody in Hollywood would put him with a shirt on in this movie now.
Which, in this movie, it's like a feature scene. You know what I mean? Like But it's that Spielberg touch where you're like, I actually believe I'm in suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about this before on the podcast, but I think it still applies here. I heard someone say once upon a time that music was more interesting when ugly people could make it, meaning basically we only let beautiful people publish music to the radio now, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's true for acting too. Like let a, you know, that this would probably be beneath him, but let a Philip Seymour Hoffman play this role and don't be afraid to try to open with him. Because as we've talked about also previously, there aren't really leading men who guarantee a big opening anymore.
Right.
The Rock is the closest thing, maybe Ryan Reynolds after that, but they're not sure fire. So why not try a different body type, a different mold of actor, right? For a film like this. I think you're right. And I don't think it's for the betterment of moviegoers.
No, it's definitely not.
Let me throw a couple things to you that Mr. Roger Ebert said in his review that I thought were particularly good points, or at least interesting. One, he praised this movie. He gave it 3 stars, and he is a big fan. But early in his review, he says, This is the movie the Amityville Horror dreamed of being.
Hmm.
And I was like, man, Ebert's taking shots at the Amityville Horror. But he's on to something. It begins with the same ingredients, a happy American family living in a big, comfortable house. It provides similar warnings of doom. Household objects move by themselves. The weather seems different around the house compared to everywhere else. And it ends in a similar apocalypse where spirits take total possession of the house, terrorize the family. He says even some of the special effects are quite similar, as when greasy goo begins to ooze around the edges of a door jamb. I think he's right that this is a very similar movie in a way I didn't expect. But I also don't want to follow him in taking a shot at the Amityville Horror. because the Amityville Horror is supposed to feel more desperate, right? The family in this, in Poltergeist, is kind of well off. When Craig T. Nelson's character misses a couple days of work, they basically show up to pitch him on a raise or a promotion so they don't lose him.
Right.
In the Amityville Horror, the family has scrimped everything together they possibly can to buy this house that's obviously cheaper than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like this, yeah, desperation, just a continual, like, we're hanging on by the, you know, by the skin of our teeth here. Whereas in Poltergeist, the spirits disrupt basically a paradisical suburban life. I still thought it was an interesting point to compare the two, and I hadn't thought of that before. You think he's onto something there, or is he stretching?
I guess, I mean, I see the similarities. I just never really thought of it as a comparison to Amityville Horror. I feel like that Amityville Horror is grittier and more terrifying is not the right word, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
For me, this movie is the precursor to the Paranormal Activity franchise.
Poltergeist.
Yes, Poltergeist.
See, that's an interesting thought. So here's where I immediately connect with that idea. The film should not be called Poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
I think that means in German, noisy ghost. And I get that there's some like knocking around here at the beginning. But this is, you know, the Bell Witch, if listeners are familiar or they're not, it's a fun Google. It's a Tennessee thing. That's a poltergeist, right? Where it's an invisible spirit knocking stuff around. Maybe we hear a voice every now and then. You don't get the skull spider guarding the door to the bedroom in a poltergeist scenario. Poltergeists tend to center around young women, not little girls. And so it's a misnamed movie. And in that sense, I could see it sort of somebody looking at it going, let's actually make a movie about an invisible ghost who's knocking stuff around. But I'll just tell you, the reason I can't see it very quickly as a precursor to Paranormal Activity is that this movie is just goofy. It's the point we talked about where I think it thinks it's self-consciously more of a comedy. And Paranormal Activity has lots of stuff to laugh at, but I don't think they were self-conscious about the things that people would laugh at. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Let me try to sell you on the reason why I think it's the precursor.
Okay.
Both of these entities are dicks.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, all they want to do is they just want to mess with people before they kill them.
Yeah.
Right. So you see, for me, the biggest thing is at the beginning of the movie where they're in the kitchen and Diane comes back and all the stuff's off the table. And she's like, those stupid workers out there just trying to play a joke. And then she leaves and she comes back and all the chairs are stacked up on the table.
Yeah,
and that's very much
a Paranormal Activity scene. Yeah,
my first inclination was, oh, mother frigger, Toby's here. How did Jeff trick me into watching another freaking Paranormal Activity movie?
Yeah, well, you know, Toby was baked off in the corner behind the lens.
Yeah. He was like, that's a good one, Steve. Sounds good. And then just the talking, you know, spiritual entity talking to the little girl through electronic devices. Like, you can't tell me that what's his name didn't watch Poltergeist and was like, I should update this and make it modern.
Yeah, now that you're talking about it, you know, the scene in this movie where the spirits come out of the TV and they go live in the wall above the bed and the dog like comes and brings a treat to try to play with them and whatnot. I really thought like the ghost dimension must have stolen this from Poltergeist and turned it into a portal you could actually walk through.
Right.
So, yeah, I see where you're going. I see what you're doing here.
Yeah. So I immediately knocked off a point because it was associated with Paranormal Activity in my mind.
It's a weird movie also in that social norms are clearly just much different back then.
Mm-hmm.
The you talked about the guys working on the pool and the mom thinking the pool guy or the construction guys had came in and stacked the chairs up. Can you imagine any scenario where a guy digging a pool in your backyard leans in and eats the marinara you're cooking and puts the spoon back and then drinks your coffee where it becomes a lighthearted moment? You know what I mean?
No.
Like, I feel like that's a get off the property and give me your company lawyer phone number.
Yeah, those guys are immediately fired from the job they're immediately fired from the firm, like from the company, and probably put on some kind of watch list now.
Yeah, because then they start hitting on the teenage daughter.
Yeah.
And mom watches it happen, is like, ah, those guys. And I just thought, what? And here's the deal. I know that we live in an entirely different world when it comes to sexual ethics from the 80s. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in the 80s. I was very young when this came out, too young to know what dynamics were. But I grew up with older sisters. This wouldn't have been laughed off, even out in the deep South, you know, in 1980 something in Tennessee. And so when that goes down, I was like, wait a minute, put those guys in the pool and fill it back in. But then they just laugh it off as hijinks. And the daughter's like flipping a bird. And the mom's like, oh, this is laughable. It was so bizarre. Just mm-hmm. bizarre.
Yeah, it really, for me, that was the one thing where I was like, oh, we're almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, we're back in time almost 40 years ago because stuff like that. I don't think the sexual harassment was, I mean, I guess it was, but I think you're right. I think parents would have been a little more, a little more upset about that. But it seems like that when Dana gives him the middle finger and everything, that's when the mom shakes her head and she's like, "Hup, that's my girl."
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there is, man. There's a lot of stuff in this where you go, "Oh yeah, no, that wouldn't work now." There's no way.
Yeah, I just thought it was a product of a different world, one that I've never lived in.
Yeah, now Dana would have gotten her iPhone out and filmed them while they were doing that and then put them on blast on social media.
Yeah, and those guys would have like never been able, they would have had to change their names and live in a new country, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Not saying that they don't deserve that.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I'll also tell you this on this kind of like out of the 80s deal. It was fun seeing old logos. Like at one point, Cheetos are clearly a product placement in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I remember those Cheeto bags. I think it's Pepsi that's also featured. Like you just see a couple of logos and you're like, oh yeah, that existed once upon a time.
Yeah, it is always fun to get that kind of nostalgia rush when you watch old movies like this. Speaking of which, did you remember that weird cut from where like they're talking in the kitchen and then the next thing you know, they're at the neighbor's door?
No, I didn't. And then, yeah, that does stand out both for that cut. And then like I guess he just got eaten up by a bunch of mosquitoes while they were standing there talking.
Mm-hmm.
But like when we're snapped back to the bedroom, he's putting calamine all over. And I'm like, what happened? Is this,
yeah,
you know, is this supernatural? It was a weird part of the movie.
Yeah. So I guess in the kitchen, the mom, Diane, says something about, hey, we'll get Pizza Hut tonight.
Uh-huh.
And Carol Ann's like, I want pepperoni.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they made another reference to Pizza Hut that Pizza Hut didn't like. And so they had to cut it out of the movie. And
really?
That's why you get that weird cut right there.
How funny. Because I thought the Pizza Hut thing was another like product placement.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess Pizza Hut was fine with them getting Pizza Hut, but they weren't okay with whatever was. And for the life of me, I couldn't find out what was said to, you know, to be able to make Pizza Hut so mad, but
huh. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm glad you've explained several parts of this movie to me that had me scratching my head, so thank you for that.
Hey man, I do what I can.
Let me read you one other quote from Ebert's review here, which again just surprised me. It's right before the one I just read you. Special effects in the movies have grown so skilled, sensational, and scary that they sometimes upstage the human actors, and they often cost a lot more. In Poltergeist, for example, the cast is made up of relatively unknown performers. But that's all right because the real stars are producer Steven Spielberg and director Tobe Hooper, and their reputation for special effects and realistic violence. Their names on this horror film suggest that its technology will be impeccable, and they don't disappoint us. So I get this is 1982, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought the steak scene was super well done as a practical effect.
Steak well done.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I didn't even notice. Got puns for days.
That's right.
But, man, when the guy goes into the room and the spotlight hits him and he starts clawing his face off,
mm-hmm.
it could not be a less believable mask.
Oh, yeah.
And the angle of the hands tearing away at the mask couldn't be less believable. And I thought, like, boy, this is a real letdown. Whoever the special effects guy is dropped the ball pretty hard on this one. And then I get on maybe the most, at least in my book, the most respected film critic of my lifetime. And he's like, oh, these special effects are great.
Yeah.
Just like, man, we have come a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know whose hands those were tearing at the face?
Oh, no, I don't.
Spielberg's.
Oh. Well, he's got himself to blame then, because no human hands have ever been mounted at that angle.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it for me, it was cool to see practical effects again, because, you know, we're all in such a CGI world now. It was fun to see the practical effects, but yeah, dude, it looks rough. Like, it's Event Horizon rough.
Oh, whatever. You get out of here. You get out of here.
I just haven't taken a swipe at Event Horizon in a while.
Yeah, well, you just feel free to keep being wrong, pal.
Can I propose this to you?
Mm-hmm.
Can I propose for our 200th episode, we do a watch-along to Event Horizon, and you and I are in the same room together while we do it, and I'll give it an honest-to-God free shot.
I'm up for it, man. I'm up for it. I think probably the most disappointing moment of my horror fandom was when we watched it together the first time, so maybe I'll get a redo.
And I cackled through the majority of it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It was not not the reaction I was hoping for. Well, so the last thing I've got to talk about, and I'm not sure if you've got more you want to bring out, is just that, again, this movie clearly seems to me to be played for comedy very often. The biggest indicator that I'm going to use as my example is the scene before we go into Carol Ann's bedroom after she's been taken. And the paranormal investigator is making a big deal about how he captured a toy car moving across a floor over like 7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig T. Nelson is perfect as the straight man. And he says, yeah. And then he opens the door and we basically step into Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? Maybe they thought this movie was scary. And clearly, like I said, a bunch of like the Chicago Film Critics Association, this has been added to lots of scary movie lists. But I look at it now and I'm like, this is a family comedy in the vein of like The Burbs with Tom Hanks.
That's a really good comparison.
So you don't think I'm crazy about that? Like,
no.
So I'm not trying to like take a shot at what everybody considers one of the best horror movies of the genre. It just doesn't strike me as particularly horrific anymore. It strikes me as more of a comedy.
Yeah. Well, and I think I think number one, that shows a maturity in movie making.
Mm.
We have a lot more access to scarier situations now. I think that if you redid this movie, and I'm not talking about the 2015 remake, but I'm talking about if this was an original idea for a movie now, you're probably looking at a Paranormal Activity type movie.
Hmm.
And while I don't necessarily think that Paranormal Activity movies were all that scary, I do think that obviously the first one was much more terrifying than this. And I think that again shows Spielberg's fingerprints on this thing, because I think, I mean, Toby Hooper, whatever his name is, he proved with like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and other movies later in his career that the dude knows horror. He knows scary.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this is Spielberg's attempt at being a horror director.
He just can't dial down the Spielberg.
Yeah, and it just still comes off as a family comedy.
I mean, I'm with you.
Now, having said that, I would assume that in 1982, this probably was terrifying. But when you look at what has come after 40, you know, in the last 40 years, it's difficult to say, is it still a great movie? I think it's still a great movie, but it's definitely not like a top 10 horror movie of all time.
I think that's fair. And again, we're talking about this from the effect of like, does it actually scare you?
Right.
From the angle. I mean, it probably is a top 10 or at least top 20 horror movie in the genre just by proceeds and reviews and things like that. It doesn't play very much as a horror movie. I mentioned the Burbs earlier. I actually think the son of this movie is Peter Jackson's The Frighteners from 95. It just seems to be walking that same line between legit comedy and an attempt to scare you. I think The Frighteners is actually scarier, but it's that sort of, hey, big time old Hollywood. I say old Hollywood, not 20s Hollywood, but like 80s Hollywood movie magic. It's Fantasia mm-hmm. with dead corpses popping out of the ground, you know, mm-hmm. Dead corpses, Department of Redundancy Department.
Oh, speaking of that, dude, did you read about the fact that they used actual dead bodies for yeah. those like the climax scenes?
Yeah, that whole pool, like Joe Beth Williams in the pool thing must have been a thing on set. So I think Josh Powell posted that in our Facebook group. So thank you, Josh. One, they used real corpses rather than dummies because I guess they were cheaper. But I also read that with all the lighting around the pool there, Joe Beth was afraid to get in, afraid that something electric would fall in with her and electrocute mm-hmm. her. And so Spielberg got in there with her and said, yeah. Well, we'll both dive in. And that's what got her in the pool. So that must have been, I mean, I know it's a big deal in the movie, but it must have been a huge deal on set.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, and I guess they didn't tell Joe Bob or whatever her name is. They didn't tell her that they were corpses until after they got done shooting, which was smart.
Yep. I wouldn't have done it either. I would have just told her, oh, yeah. Those are replica dummies.
Yeah.
Well, man, that's about what I got on the film. Anything else you want to bring out about old Poltergeist?
No, man. I think that's about it. I'm really glad we watched this. This wasn't. I probably haven't sat down and watched this movie in 25 years. So it's nice to revisit an old classic.
Yep. I did read. Not only was it nice to visit this old classic, but I read that it sort of came to life as maybe potentially a sequel to Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Okay.
And it was, you know, Hooper basically said, no way, let's not do that. Let's do this other thing. So I had never seen Close Encounters, and it's on Amazon Prime right now for no additional cost.
Oh, dang.
Great Richard Dreyfuss vehicle. So if you enjoyed going to Poltergeist like we did, you might enjoy hopping on Amazon Prime and watching Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Well, I may try to do that.
Yeah. It's a long one, but it's a good watch so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Awesome. Well, let's get to it, man. Well, I'm going to go backwards in what we normally do, or maybe this is what we normally, I don't know. I haven't slept much. Did we see something scary?
Man, I can't say we did. I tell you what, I'm going to put my horror uncle overalls on.
Yeah.
The clown scene attacking the boy was maybe mildly scary. And so I'm going to give a yes, because it just, that was decent. And it feels weird for neither one of us to say Poltergeist was scary. So
yeah.
I'll say yes on that front.
That's fair. Yeah, then I'll be the cynical heel and say no, that we didn't see anything scary in this one. With that being said, though, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rank this?
Man, this is 7 to 8 for me. It's a fun watch. It's chock full of 80s goodness. I don't really have complaints about it. It made me laugh. I like the supernatural elements. Craig T. Nelson's great. The only problem I have with this movie, really, is another connection to your paranormal activity theory. Early on in the movie, every normal family, which this is supposed to be a normal family, they just leave the house and go live in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only problem I have with this movie. It's otherwise pretty smart. And so, yeah, I'll just 7.5 right in the middle.
Yeah. And to that end, at the very end where they're like, we're going to go to the hotel tonight. I get my family to the hotel then, and then I go take care of whatever crap I need to go take care of at the office.
Absolutely.
Not the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I understand that you got to do it for the climax, the movie, but still, I just couldn't believe like when that happened. And then when he wasn't even back, like the kids are going to bed, Holmes, like you're going to pick them up and take them to a hotel.
That was
if they're going to bed.
Yeah. My wife and I were like the same deal. Like, you're supposed to go somewhere. Why are you putting them to bed in their rooms?
Yeah.
And like the Darth Vader doll is still out. So I guess that is another weakness.
Yeah.
Kind of repeating the theme, though, even the ending of this movie with Craig T. Nelson pushing the TV out into the outside the hotel room. This is a comedy. This is
a Halloween episode of Coach.
Yeah, there you go, man. That's really well done. Yeah, for sure.
All you needed was Jerry Van Dyke just banging on his front door. Hayden! Hayden! Got it, maybe, Mr. Jerry Van Dyke.
Maybe one of our listeners who can edit stuff can splice that together for us.
I sure hope so.
Well, what about you? What are you going to put a rating on?
So, I'm gonna do a cop-out. I'm going to give this a nostalgia rating. And then I'm going to give it how I actually feel about it.
Okay.
A nostalgia rating, I think I'm right there with you, 7.5. As far as watching the movie today, or well, last night, I'm going to probably give it a 6. It's still a great like trip down memory lane, still a fun nostalgic movie. But there were some things that made me roll my eyes. You know how I am. And there were some things where I was like, man, I mean, everything that we pretty much talked about here today are things that I thought watching the movie last night. So I think if I watched this movie in 1982, it's a 7.5 to an 8. But watching it now with a fresh set of eyes, not having like I said, not having seen this movie in over 25 years, I think I have to be a little bit lower.
I think that's fair.
But I do want to preface it by saying still a great movie. Absolutely recommend it to everyone listening to this podcast. Almost a 2-hour movie. Did not feel like a 2-hour movie. It's a lot of fun, but just don't go into it expecting to be scared, because you're not going to go into it saying, okay, I'm going to watch cinematic history and see the precursor to a lot of my favorite horror movies.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Well said.
Yeah, and I think if you do that, then you're set and you're good to go.
All right, man. So, we have covered Poltergeist. Happy 150th episode.
Absolutely, man. Happy 150th episode. And the cool thing is that for 151, we're doing 2015's Poltergeist, so we're not out of this thing yet.
That's true. I'm looking forward to seeing that, too. More Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I've only seen it once. I saw it in theaters, and I'm looking forward to the rewatch on it as well. And like you said, man, anytime you get more Sam Rockwell in your life, that's a good week. So let us know what you thought about this movie. Let us know what you thought about the review. You can join the Facebook group. We Saw Something Scary. That is the best Facebook group on social media right now. And you can become part of the team. There's trivia nights Saturdays, I think, most of the time. So, yeah, so we've got the Facebook group. There's Instagram, Twitter. You can follow us on Reddit, all the channels that we have. Make sure and do that. Hey, I want to say a quick shout out to our newest Patreon subscriber.
That's right. Jen Moslick.
Thank you for being a part of that. And you can do that at patreon.com/scarypodcast. And we are grateful for all of you that do that. He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. We're out of time. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you back here next week with Paranormal Activity with Poltergeist from 2015. I hope you have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye, man.